So as a child, I wanted to be a paleontologist. And I was like super serious about it. I loved rocks. To be clear, as an adult human person, I'm aware that geologists study rocks, not paleontologists. But my six-year-old self didn't really care. In elementary school, I would spend time burying my rocks in the sandbox, only to dig them up, brush them off with a paintbrush. I wore my dad's bucket hat and asked for paleontologist boots for my birthday. And this is not just a short childhood phase. I brought my favorite rock books to the first day of sixth grade, just in case my teacher needed them. And up until I declared in the seventh grade that I wanted to work in the church, I was hyper-focused on my future career as the most renowned paleontologist in all the world. But growing up, rocks littered my room and filled my drawers. I would identify them and categorize them. And I had a special box reserved for the most special of rocks. And these rocks weren't set apart because they were more beautiful or valuable. Because let's be real, my rock collection was like 50% slate, 40% white marble, and 10% other. But they were special because they were from important moments or places. And occasionally, I will look through my rock box and see the rock I found the day we buried my grandmother, the pebble I found on my first day of school, or the stone I carried with me into the baptismal waters. And even though I have long since abandoned my dream of becoming a paleontologist, I still pick up a rock or stone now and then. This rock came from my first day in Atlanta. I look at it and I remember how excited and terrified I was to begin seminary. This rock came from my first day here in Lexington. These rocks, and all of the rocks in my box, remind me of parts of my story. Throughout the Bible, stones helped people to tell their stories. Sarah and Abraham make many stone altars as they journey from their home in search of the promised land. Jacob, Abraham's grandson, after running away from his brother Esau, lays his head on a stone and sleeps. When he awakens after a vivid dream, he declares, "Surely this is the house of God," and he makes his pillow stone an altar. In our text, the Israelite people, the ancestors of Abraham and Jacob, lay stones after they crossed the Jordan River on their way to the Promised Land. Now, this is a big moment for them. It's a moment the people crossing the river have been waiting for 40 years. And it's a moment the Israelites have been waiting for generations and generations. The people have been wandering in the wilderness. Their leader, Moses, leads them through the parted Red Sea, but then he dies before they ever reach the Promised Land. Joshua is Moses' successor, and he is tasked with leading these people across the river and into the Promised Land. The river is a powerful symbol both here and in other texts throughout the Bible, and crossing it meant many changes for the Israelites. They are moving into the unfamiliar and the unknown. Their journey has been marked by transition and struggle, and this trek across the river and into a new place is no exception. I find myself at a cross the river kind of season as I begin my journey here with all of you, in a new state, with a new home, far away from my family. It's exciting, and it's wonderful, and it's filled with hope, but it's also a little bit scary. As I plant roots here, I'm excited to get to know you and this community. And it's wonderful to be in a place where I get to live out my call to ministry. But it's also new and unknown. I wonder if and how quickly I'll make friends. I worry that I will get lost trying to navigate my way back to my apartment when my phone is dead. True story. I'm afraid of failure. Our world, our local and global communities are also in a cross-the-river kind of season. There's a lot going on in our world. Many things are changing, and it seems as if every day there is a new app on my iPhone that I don't understand. And the news headlines can be scary or sad or contentious. What's coming next is unknown. We see things that are hard, and we see things that are hopeful. We, as a church, are in a season of transition, and not just our congregation here, but the Big C Church, churches all over the world. Because as the world changes and as our communities change, we have to balance holding on to our traditions, naming them as precious and sacred, while also learning how to embody the Spirit of God in a way that resonates here and now. It's been a privilege to hear your stories, to learn about your traditions, to learn more about the work you have done these past months with your dream teams. Your traditions root you in history and heritage, and your dreams are big and bold and passionate. You have long engaged this community of Lexington, and you have imagined how you might continue doing that in new and creative ways. You have considered how we might adopt sustainable and responsible models for doing missions, about how we can use technology more effectively. I'm sure you have discussed and perhaps even debated ideas and how to implement them. You have both embraced and challenged the long-held traditions of this church family, and you have dreamed about how we can build on that history and heritage to be church in a changing world. And indeed, that is exciting, and it's wonderful, and it's filled with hope. But at times, it might be a little bit scary. Trying new things can be risky. And this, I think, will always be the tension when we have rivers to cross. Because crossing our rivers as individuals, as community, and as church will be exciting, and it will be filled with hope. But it will also come with some fear and some risk. I mean, surely the Israelites were feeling both excited and anxious. They had reached the promised land, but like also they had reached the promised land, something they had anticipated and yearned for many, many years. They did not know what was coming next, but they also did not step into that riverbed alone. Back in chapter 3, Joshua reminds the people that the Lord would do amazing things, and he instructs the priests to carry the Ark of the Covenant and lead the way. And this Ark of the Covenant symbolized the presence of the living God. God was leading the way. God was ever present. God is leading the way. God is ever present. God was present with the Israelites as they crossed the Jordan River, and God is present with us now as we cross our own rivers and as we move into new seasons of life. We know God's presence is in this sacred place and in all places. As I listen to your stories and as I explore the rooms and spaces in this church and learn about who you are, I see the presence of God. As I hear about how you as individuals and as a church community thoughtfully and intentionally engage your local and global community, I see the presence of God. As you hope for the future, I see the presence of God. Your stories are a part of God's narrative, and this is a narrative that goes back to our ancestors who made stone altars and searched for a promised land. And our ancestors, the Israelites, crossed the Jordan River naming the presence of God and telling their stories. In verse 23, a little bit after we read today, the people are reminded of their history and their heritage. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan for you until you crossed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up for us until we crossed over. So that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, and so that you may fear the Lord your God forever. they are reminded that as they were led by Moses and Miriam and Aaron out of slavery in Egypt, that God parted the Red Sea for them so they could pass safely. And I imagine them telling this story to their children, mothers and fathers gathering them as they stood frightened in front of a furious river. Remember, our God parted the Red Sea and protected us. We are strong. We have survived. They trusted what they knew. Earlier in the service, we heard Zoe read Walter Brueggemann's poetic prayer, Old Stories Become New Songs. Brueggemann, an Old Testament scholar and theologian, tells us something of trusting what we know. Hear his words one more time. We love to tell the old, old story. We love to sing the old, old song of your saving deeds of mercy and freedom and healing and newness. We know about Exodus freedom and dancing tambourines. We know about land and huge clusters of grapes. We know about rivers of water and rivers of oil. We know about the strangeness that the blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the dead are raised, the poor rejoice. We know. Give us the courage to trust what we know and to obey what we hope. We know that the old, old story in our telling becomes a new, dangerous, transforming song, and so we sing. As we begin new jobs or a new school year, as we mark milestones and embark on our new beginnings, as we navigate a changing and sometimes scary world, as we wade into new waters, both as church, as community, and as individuals, trust what you know. Know that this is a place of sacred community with a rich history. This is a place where great joys and great sorrows are shared. In this place, in the church, we tell the stories of our faith. We wait each year for the coming of the Christ child, and we walk together through the shadows of the cross. We tell our stories, and we tell God's story. Know that God is present in this place, and that God goes with us when we leave it. God is already at work in our community and in our world. God's Spirit is moving in our lives and in our stories, even when we cannot feel it. Trust what you know. But Brueggemann also reminds us the importance of obeying what we hope, because the Spirit of God is also moving in the hope and promise of what is to come, on what is on the other side of the river. And we are called by the God who wades into the waters before us to go with great hope and great anticipation and cross our rivers, so that we may participate with the work God is already doing, and so that we may embody the Spirit of God in ways that resonate here and now. The Israelites cross the river, and Joshua instructs one from each of the 12 tribes present to take a stone and carry it on their shoulder to the other side. Now, these stones were big and heavy, almost symbolic of the weight of their journey. And these stones, these 12 stones, were a reminder of what the Israelites knew, a reminder of their journey, of their hopes, and of God's work among them. Joshua 4, 21 through 22. When your children ask their parents in time to come, what mean these stones? Then you shall let your children know. Israel crossed over the Jordan here on dry ground. Their stones were their history keepers. They dug them out of the river, dried them off, and constructed a monument. And those stones, they saw the pain of slavery and wilderness wandering, the fear of a rushing river, but more importantly, the hope of a promised land and the presence of a God who is always. They trusted what they knew, and as they crossed that river into the unknown, they obeyed what they hoped. The church is full of river crossers. When women were required to be silent in the church, Martha Stearns Marshall preached. Martha Stearns Marshall was an 18th century preacher who helped to found Sandy Creek Baptist Church in Randolph County. And the first mission of Sandy Creek Baptist was to start Abbots Creek Missionary Baptist Church right here in Davidson County. Martha crossed the river so that now it's not so uncommon to see women in the pulpit. When this nation was overwhelmed by racism and hatred, Martin Luther King Jr. crossed the river and spoke a prophetic word to the world. Harry Philpott, who was raised and felt a call to ministry here in this church, crossed so many rivers. Thanks to Dr. Philpott and other river crossers who believed all people are equally called and loved by God, my home church, Auburn First Baptist, began ordaining women as deacons, and Auburn University was integrated. We know these stories because people tell them, because they create monuments. In February of each year, women are invited into pulpits across the United States for Martha Stearns Marshall Month of Celebrating Women Preachers. In Atlanta, you can visit the Civil Rights Museum and learn about those, like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who hoped for a better world. You can sift through photo albums and documents at Auburn University and even in my home church to learn about the courageous witness of Dr. Philpott. And you can see the fruit of his passion in women like me, who were raised in churches that affirmed their call. Just like the stones dug out of the Jordan River reminded the Israelites of their stories, these monuments and so many others remind us of our heritage. They teach us what we know, and they call us to continue telling the story, because the work is not yet done. In many churches, women are still silenced. Racism and hatred are still painful and present realities in our country and in the world. There are still people who we fail to acknowledge as created, loved, and called by God. So we must keep telling these stories, remembering where we have come from, remembering the rivers we have crossed, so that we may see what God has done and we may find courage to wade into the waters once more. We must keep telling these stories, and we must listen to the stories of those who cry out in hope and in pain and anticipation. We must trust what we know, that the presence of the living God goes before us, and the Spirit of God calls us, so that we may obey what we hope, so that we may be active and engaged participants in the work God and the Holy Spirit are doing within and among us. This hoping is risky. It requires us to wade into the river, knowing the waters might be fierce. And it asks us to remember our stories, both the beautiful and the painful, the pain of slavery and wilderness wandering, and the hope of a promised land. It asks us to pick up stones and create monuments, monuments that convict us to shape our stories around the hope of God's faithfulness and around our call to live out the presence of God in this world. Joshua 4:6. When your children ask in time to come, what do these stones mean to you? Then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off in front of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall be to the Israelites a memorial forever. When our children ask us, what mean these stones? What will we tell them?